Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello, good day, good evening. I'm so delighted that you are joining me. We are going to be talking about a man's life. A man's life that ended up taking a twist that in a million years he would never have imagined would have affected him. His name is Ted Baxter. He has put together his memoir called Relentless. This is his story about how he survived a massive stroke at the youthful age of 41 that changed his life 180 degrees. I think you'll find it not only inspiring, but it'll make you aware of some things that can affect us physically in a way and manner, again, most of us would not even imagine. Ted Baxter, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you for having me on your show. Great to be here.
Ted, when I was reading your material, I have known many different people that have gone through strokes. Every single one of them have had different experiences. But yours was just absolutely phenomenal in the way that you were affected with a particular kind of a condition that required a total shift out of a life patterning that you had really enjoyed. You were extraordinarily successful. You had this amazing drive. You were what we'd call Superboy. I mean, really, or Super Guy. Maybe that would be a better way to say it. And what happened, Ted? What kind of stroke was it? And what was the condition that ended up with that stroke?
Well, thank you very much for the condolences there. But there were nothing in my family signified that I could get a stroke like I had. I had no warning signs. I never had any mild strokes such as TIA, either of that. My health was great. I exercised almost every day. Had low cholesterol, didn't smoke, only drank modestly. As one doctor said to me, he said, "You're as healthy as a horse." And I took really good care of myself. So my situation was due to things like stress and pressure that related to my job, and you really couldn't predict it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely true. Now you were in the financial industry. You were what someone might call a golden boy, but I would say you had to be one of the... I was so tired by the time I got through reading about what you had accomplished, I just said, I think I'll lay down and take a nap. But seriously, you were going. You ended up getting married. You lived in different parts of the world. You were the super guy that solved problems. You dealt with different cultures. I mean, there would be people when they'd read about that, they say, oh, I envy him.
Yeah. Well, I landed a great job for one of the premier investment hedge firms based in Chicago. It's called Citadel Investment. Now, I was a global managing director for a premier hedge fund and investment institution, Citadel. My job was as a global financial controller. So I worked there 2004 and part of 2005 until this tragedy happened. But my job, it was a huge job. I had a ton of responsibilities. One, I loved, busy to the max every day, traveling the world for my job, as you said. And it was a dream job, but it was a lot of pressure with it and stress. And that maybe was the beginning of the end.
So you were in that situation. Now, where were you when this hit you?
I was at home. I was at home. I had just had a flight, so it was it was truly terrifying, right? But I was only 41 years old, so young. I told you that to you. I finished my business trip that day in London. So I took a flight back to Chicago, and everything was fine. That night, I was watching television. I was watching The Apprentice, of all things, and commercials with my wife. Now, she asked me a question. I didn't respond. And she repeatedly asked me that same question. And still, I wasn't responding. My wife got up from her chair and came up by me. And at the point, she knew something was terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I stared at the space and starting to sweat. A huge migraine that started. And I knew I was in trouble. But my wife then called the police just to come by and see what he thinks. And the paramedics knew that I was going to have a stroke or I had it. And the paramedics they were there in a minute in my house. I could hear words and sentences, but I couldn't formulate.
Mm-hmm.
The paramedics were asking me simple questions like what is your name? Where are you right now? You know, how many fingers am I holding up at the moment? But at the moment, I lost the power of language. I lost the power of comprehension. And I discovered this later. I lost my ability to use my right side of my body. So yes, I guess I lost it all at that point.
Yes, you did. And Kelly, who was your wife at the time,
yep.
She, you know, it was immediately, your lives just flipped right then and there. And you were put in emergency, care environment. You were tested, and they said it was a clot. And that, of course, we're often told that people, if they don't get up and move around, they can develop phlebitis or clots on a plane flight. And the flight from London was a fairly long flight. So they honestly don't know where that clot came from. If you really get down to the bare bones, it was one of these freakish things that occurred, and it affected your brain dramatically. And you were diagnosed with aphasia. This is something I was not familiar with it at all. What is the definition of aphasia?
No, with aphasia means it usually comes with having a stroke, or a head injury, or TBI. It is an impediment of language and an inability to comprehend or formulate language. So there are approximately 2.4 million people in the United States have aphasia. So it's really weird that not more people to know about this. But there are a lot of flavors of aphasia, global aphasia, conduction, anomia, et cetera. When I first became a person with aphasia, mine was pretty bad. Couldn't write, couldn't read, you know, I couldn't say anything. It told the speech pathologist that, look, he's got global aphasia. And I couldn't believe it was going on. So for the first year after my stroke, I could only say about 1,000, maybe 1,200 words at the most, which usually it was nouns.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you some comparison, by age four, you have 4,000, 5,000 words.
So wow.
For me, as a stroke survivor, and now as a person with aphasia, I can only say 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
So it was unbelievable. So, you know, they can put that as to why I worked my tail off to get better as much as I could. That's the real reason.
I was really surprised to find, because this had never been discovered with you in any kind of physical, that you had a patent foramen ovale. It's abbreviated to a PFO, and it's a birth defect. Now, there was nothing in your family history to even have anyone consider this. So This was found out because they had to go through all kinds of thorough examinations with you, give you blood tests, all kinds of things. And because of that defect, it caused the clot that was in your body to go directly to your brain rather than going into your lungs.
That's right. That's exactly right. There were two factors that were in play, and both were unbeknownst to me. I had a DVT, which is a deep vein thrombosis in my right shin that broke loose, which created the blood clot. But, and two, I had a PFO, which you know what it is now, right now, or a hole in my heart. I usually call it a hole in my heart, which I didn't know. So when you have those things happen at the same time, that basically attracts the clot through my body bypassing my lung, shooting the clot to my brain, and that caused my stroke.
Mm-hmm. This all happened so very, very quickly, and you immediately started into a rehabilitation program. Now, again, the inner drive that you have as an individual, someone listening to you talk right now would say, gee, this guy sounds fine. Wow, he really came a long way, because your stroke occurred in 2005. So here we are, 2019, you know, that's 14 years ago, and that's a long journey, and you still are working and disciplining yourself, and one of the biggest factors that you said assisted you was being physical, staying active, but there was something. You were almost obstinate. It was really tough sometimes for people to work with you, wasn't it?
Yeah, because I didn't want to stop. You know, I'm not a guy for that for sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna do my work, and if I see that it's gonna happen. You know, for me, if I can attract the benefits of my body, then I'm going to do it. So, that's why I am where I am. My parents, when they lived, they always say that that Ted Baxter, he's gonna be the top of the course, or top of the class.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were in so many various environments, but I had to chuckle because, and I'm sure the therapist just absolutely adored you for this behavior, but you got on a treadmill and you were making it going faster and your physical coordination was not all that good. And when the therapist, because the therapist would go outside the door when people were doing their physical therapy and they'd talk with each other, and I had a family member, I know exactly what you're talking about there, because they had my family member, I would take them in for therapy, and this person would sit down and they would work, but the therapist, because they had different people they were paying attention to, maybe they'd just take a break because they would have one person right after another coming in for their therapy. And usually people followed orders, but you were not going to follow orders. You decided you were going to go on the treadmill and go as fast as you possibly could. And that therapist said, she saw what you were doing and she wasn't too happy with you.
Well, I have to say you are absolutely 100% right on that, right? But I wouldn't suggest that anybody who just had a stroke or with a person with aphasia, that they could use what I did. But in my case, I thought, you know, in my mind worked as follows: that you got to start with the fundamentals. You know, physical, whether you can you can walk and jog and run. And then after that, you have to worry about the speech. If you're going to work the nouns and verbs, pronouns, all kind of stuff. I mean, you have to get it going.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it was basically basic fundamentals. That's what I did.
And repetition. This is something that drove you up a wall because you just, again, this tremendous drive inside of you. You wanted to get things done day before yesterday. Not now, but day before yesterday. And okay. This is something where you fortunately ended up having therapists that were able to keep you focused. And that was the biggest thing, because there had to be this repetition physically over and over again. So you'd get the muscle memory where it belonged, and the brain was rebuilding itself. It was making new connections. You used flashcards, children's flashcards. And I thought, this is really an insight into what it takes to come back from a serious situation like this. Your wife, Kelly, took you to so many places. The stress must have been just incredible on her.
I mean, you know, you're talking about Kelly, and there are not enough kudos for me to give to her. If it weren't for her, you know, I probably wouldn't be telling you stories right now about my situation. I mean, I would probably have passed. But she was unbelievable. I mean, she's right now a good friend of mine. So, you know, it's just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But you're right about a positive outlook, and you know, you have to really hope. You know, if you don't have those two things to start, it's not going to be a successful outcome. You need to be able to say that, well, look, I have a positive mindset, and there's a lot of hope here. It's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And you were consistently working. And again, Kelly was there through thick and thin and just standing beside you. And I just think that is so significant, because she couldn't be in your head. She had to be aware and cognizant in a whole different way. And that's something that people don't realize that caretakers have to do. You also had a group called UMAP. And this was a special aphasia group that you became aware of. And there was a gentleman by the name of Tom that helped you make some turnarounds, because you were fiercely independent. You really wanted to do everything on your own, and Tom mm-hmm. wanted to be your friend, and that was something you had to break through to open up to let him into your space. That was pretty tough, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I just did a presentation for UMAP last week, and I met all of the SLPs right now. I mean, they are fantastic right now. I mean, I need more kudos to give that to them, because I had my SLP, the primary therapist, gave me a hug, and, you know, she's fantastic. But you're right. I had to know what aphasia friends, people who have aphasia, how that's going to go with me, because I really have to accept the fact that I still have aphasia. And there is not a person that I could see that somebody raises his hand and saying that, hey, okay, well, he has aphasia, but now he doesn't have it. It doesn't really work like that. And I am living proof because of that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But when I took it and let him to go through my space. I had more things that became easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that is so important, because when we try to keep everything inside. And there are other people that are suffering too, that there's a commonality, then you can feel at ease. It's the same with just about any kind of a disorder, but with you wanting to learn the language, I mean, wanting to get your language skills back, wanting to be able to physically have a kind of life that was going to enable you to feel some kind of normalcy. I mean, this was such a trauma, such a tremendous trauma. And we're talking about years that you invested in your rehabilitation and other things. And one of the most powerful parts of your book for me when I was reading it was when you told Kelly, because your right side wasn't working, you tried eating. You said, I am going to eat with my right hand, and I'm going to use my right side of the body until I'm ready to go to bed. I want to get better. And you actually had her tie your left hand so that you couldn't use it. And that was the very first meal you tried using your right hand. Of course, it was a disaster, and it was a special meal she had fixed. And it was one of those moments where this is not a television special. Thank you very much, and we're not having very much fun here. But yet that enabled you to develop your right side.
That's exactly right. That's the doctors now, they made this therapy. They call it constraint-induced movement therapy. I don't know what it's called when I use that. But I know that I can do it myself, and I was using my wife, you know, to tie my good side of my arm to my back. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me to go through that, I mean, and you're absolutely right. The first time I did it, I mean, it didn't work. I mean, you know, and she started crying. I started crying. You know, I was sitting at the end of the day. I left my lamb chops there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then I tried it the next day. Next day, I noticed that I could do the next day that move my right arm more than I did the time that I started it. And so I knew that it's gonna take a lot of time, a lot of work, but I'll do it.
And you actually did. Something too that I thought was just absolutely fabulous was the development of a design, because so many of you in the aphasia group, you love Starbucks coffee. We're in Seattle here, okay? And Starbucks is our headquarters are here. All right. But, you know, what I was so impressed with was the design of the coffee menu card. This is something you all put together so that the people that have aphasia or anyone else that might have a difficulty communicating what they want. This is amazing. And it was right on the cup. Wow. This was really a great idea.
Oh, well, thanks for that. I mean, you know, that's going to be those days. I don't think I was 10 years ago, but that was the beginning of a community of aphasia to start the event of being awareness and education to the people, to the population, of what we have to deal with every day, giving up from my bed and, you know, going down to Starbucks. And that stuff, that takes a lot of time. I mean, for now, I've got that down.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I'm saying, you know, every Monday I go to, I volunteer myself to a communication recovery group for the hospital here in California. I have to tell the people, but look, it's going to take you some time to get your stuff out of your bed, and they'll then go down to Starbucks, and you know, just take your time. Mm-hmm. And the baristas, they will now know. They know about this stuff.
Yes, they do. And they were totally supportive, which is fabulous. I think it's absolutely fabulous. Now, sports were a very significant part of your recovery. You took on golf, Pilates, boxing, and eventually you yeah. decided to do yoga. And all of that, what it does, it helps to stimulate the brain, and it keeps the muscles active. And the body has a chance, especially the brain, has a chance to develop new connecting neurons, if you will, and the brain learns to do things differently. But as you said, it takes time. But I did have to smile, because when you decided that you were going to try golf, and it was a time, a guy by the name of Patrick was working with you and some other people, and he asked you to hit the ball, and you hit it so hard it went 200 yards. And he said, okay, tell me what happened to you. Because he said, you're not going to have any problems hitting the ball. I mean, I thought that was just delightful. He said, okay, we don't have a problem here. This guy hits 200 yards plus. Oh, boy.
Yes, I can't lie. I mean, you're absolutely right with the story. So that's why I put it in. I figured I want to have my book, a memoir, you know, as one place where I can go and I'm going to remember this, you know, when I'm going to be 80 or 85,
mm-hmm.
telling maybe some children or something like that. I remember it.
Well, you ended up leaving. You were in the Chicago area, I believe, and you ended up going to California, which is where you are right now. You do
That's right.
volunteer work. This book was finished. You go into the details about a Dr. Small and how he assisted you. He had worked with you early on, and he ended up relocating to California. And there's a wonderful, wonderful group that you became affiliated with. You and Kelly ended up being divorced, but you're very, very good friends. And you did some reflection, too, because you said your priorities were wrong before the stroke, because your number one priority was work, number two was work, number three was work, number four was working out with sports, and number five was wife and family. So you said in your book it was no wonder why you and Kelly ended up outgrowing each other and going your separate ways, but you're still very, very close, and you ended up with a wonderful woman, Michelle, and you have your dog, Zorro. I think that's the name of Zorro. And your life is very rich and very full, and you still are working very diligently to not just educate people about this, but also to keep yourself in good form. You have this drive that I think is just inspirational to anybody that would hear your story. And I'm so grateful for you being with me this evening. Now, Ted, you have a website. It's TedWBaxter.com. TedWBaxter.com. What are people going to find on that site, Ted?
They're going to find where my book, how they can go to purchase it, and they'll find some of our articles that I've been doing, a lot of the articles were published now, and I have a couple of videos there, and now what I'm doing nowadays, for example, where I go to present a presentation to a group.
Well, Ted Baxter, you are a man that has come through the fires of the experiences you've gone through, and you got burned, but you said, I'm going to heal. And you are just a powerful presentation of what the human spirit can do, and also the dedicated professionals that you were able to work with that put up with you momentarily, running on a treadmill when you're not supposed to, and doing some other fun things that they said, no, you don't do things this way. You're going to do it our way. And you eventually realize they were telling you the truth. You're a wonderful person, Ted Baxter. Thank you again for being my guest.
Thank you very much, Donna. Thank you very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. TedWBaxter.com. Do check out his website. We are taking a break now. We're going to be back in just a moment, and I'm expecting a call from Hawaii. Ah, yes, the land of the hula and much more.
You're listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you'd like to have an opportunity to be featured on this program or Warriors for Peace heard Wednesdays, please send a copy of your publication along with your contact information to The Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Lakewood, Washington 98497. Please allow 6 to 8 weeks for review of the publication. Again, mailing address is Post Office Box 97272, Lakewood, Washington 98497.
Donna Sebo here. My guest, Ted Baxter. His book, again, is Relentless. When someone has a serious illness, when they have a stroke, when they go through those kinds of experiences and they are then able to be open and to communicate with us, what they had to do to help repair their bodies, you cannot beat that. And it's something I'm so glad we're able to share through this programming, because if you, like me, have had family members that have been affected seriously by a stroke, you need to know that there are options to work with. So do check out his website, TedWBaxter.com. And let's see if we have a caller from beautiful Hawaii. Is this Danny?
Yes.
Danny.
Aloha.
Aloha. Okay, Danny, what part of the Hawaiian Islands are you on?
I'm in Kauai.
Oh.
It's so close to the Northwest. I mean, it's a very, they call it the Garden Isle. It's
boy, I believe it.
Natural.
Can I envy you?
Yes.
I have heard so many things about Kauai. One day I hope to have the privilege of being there, because I understand it is just absolutely, absolutely gorgeous. Well, Danny, you're over there for a wedding.
I am. It's my daughter, my one and only child, and she's marrying a wonderful guy. So it's going to be a wonderful little vacation for me.
Well, I want you to just know that it's cool here. It's overcast. The sun has decided to go to Hawaii, not to be here. So I'm just going to sit here and I'm just going to say, oh, I wish I could be there. But seriously, let's talk about why we are chatting this evening, because you have been very, very deeply involved with a wonderful event that's coming up on the 29th of this month, and that's the BEPC Conscious Wellness Expo. Danny, how did you get involved with this? I mean, this is its 41st year.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, I guess the years kind of fly by. I've been with them for about 20 years, and I never dreamed that I would one day be helping to organize it. It's really quite an event, and it pulls together for decades people in the Northwest, and it's a great place to come meet people. People find new business partners and all kinds of new ideas and products. And this year, we're really excited because it has suddenly just really taken off, and we've decided to double the space, which means we've doubled the number of vendors, we've doubled the number of free speakers, and you know, we still have to kind of turn people away. So there's been an explosion, I think, of people that are now interested in metaphysical subjects. And it's no longer just, you know, relegated to a lot of doubters. We have now scientists who are weighing in and new discoveries with brain science and healing. And it seems like it's really changed in another way, and that's just the sheer volume of information.
Yes.
I think that, yeah, I heard somewhere where the volume of information for the world doubles every day. And it certainly seems like when we look at the, I'll just mention crystals. It used to be that you had a crystal Bible or a crystal encyclopedia, and it pretty much covered the basic crystals. But now there are so many discoveries and new mines and people finding out and naming completely different types of crystals that really there are thousands of new ones. And it's great to know that there are so many people now that are tuned into the energy that way.
I think, too, what makes this event, the BEPC Conscious Wellness Expo, so significant, let me use that term, is that there's an openness here. You have over 100 vendors and healers and readers that are going to be there, of which I'm going to be one. And I, like you, have been associated with this organization and this event for so many years, and to watch the different cultural environments that come in. There have been some vendors that bring in, and they have products from South America or from Egypt or from China. And it is just the diversity that people have the opportunity to explore is just wonderful. And this is a family event. People bring their kids. And I just think that this is absolutely great because it allows for an openness of communication. And what I've often said about this event is that when people come in, if they're curious about anything, it's just the one day. It's from 10 until 5. There's no rush. And everything is so conveniently located that you can go and talk to people. The vendors are wonderful because they're happy to discuss with anybody what they might want to talk about. I know I do whenever I'm there. And it's wonderful. And I think that kind of openness and communication and a willingness to just, give the best of what you've got to the people that come in, it's mutually very satisfying.
And I love that kind of Northwest flavor to this because people are really open and friendly and there is that sense of community. I mean, Seattle's a great place and it is very multicultural and it is very open and generous and a kind city. I am really proud this time to share my booth. I have a little area there and there's a lot of diversity in the people that I'm booth sharing with, from cultures, and also there's a deaf astrologer who's really, really good. And I want to really get the word out to people that, occasionally I'll see them come in and they'll be signing. So the more inclusive we can be, that really makes it, we have a really wonderful feeling.
Oh, I agree with that. This is an event where there's no charge for people to come in. And when you come in, people are going to be handed information about the speakers. And how many speakers do you have this?
We have 14.
Okay.
So that's twice as many as last year. We're running a couple of tracks. Of course, you are our keynote speaker, and we're so happy to have you. And I'd like to just tell people that I've seen you at a lot of different shows and you're right on. I love it when you read people in the audience and you are just noticing things from the back of you. You don't even have to look them in the face. You just kind of get a sense of, okay, you on the southwest side of me, here's the answer to your question that you haven't asked yet. And so I know that you are right on and you're really impressive. So I've seen you do those kinds of shows. But what really excites me about this one is that you're teaching people how to access their own inner genie. That's the title of your talk, and how they can do this themselves. And, so I'd say that around a third of the speakers are teaching people to, access their intuition, and it could be, we have Samantha Lodell who's talking about how to use your aura to navigate your world. And then we have Kelly Williams who's talking about your Akashic records and how you can retrieve your own. We have a couple of really top-notch psychics, I mean, world-class like you, who are also going to give instructions like that. Vicki Gay is one of them, and there's another gal named Linda Rasmussen who's going to tell people simple ways
that you can use your own energy to heal yourself. But what really, really also excites me about this group of speakers is that about half of them are addressing relationships. And I think, you know, in terms of how the world is kind of changing and there's a lot of anger out there. So some of the topics really respond to that. And we've got a gal named Nina Helfrey, who's going to talk about how to transform anger into compassionate connection. And she says, you know, if you get angry, it's not really the other person. It's really about you.
Well, it sounds like we've got quite a diversity, which I think is very, very good. And when people come in, then they're going to be able to find out about that diversity. You also are going to have hourly door prizes, and parking is free. This is at the Kent Commons, 525 4th Avenue North in Kent, Washington 98042, and that's Saturday, June 29th, 2019. Now, I wanted to bring up something that I think is very significant, and that is asking people to bring non-perishable food items and diapers. You've developed a relationship with Northwest Harvest. And when did this all start? When did you start working with the Northwest Harvest group?
We started that about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's something that we do, you know, at the holidays and then also at our fair. And I think in order to do this kind of work, the more practical you can make it and the more you can make it about helping other people, it tends to sharpen. It's not only good for your heart, but you can't really do good metaphysical work unless it's heart-based. At least that's my philosophy. So we try to incorporate a lot of people and speakers and products that have a practical application. And where it's like the golden rule where you, when they say there's no higher law than that, that's something that I think all of us believe in. And BETC is a nonprofit organization, and it's, I think everyone that serves in that organization gets a lot out of it just because it's a little bit different flavor when you have that nonprofit attitude.
Yes. Now, there's a website that people can go to, BEPC, Boy Edward Paul Charlie, web.org/expo. People can get their directions there. They can actually find out the information about the speakers, the time. So there's a lot there that is available. And, of course, you're going to be coming back from Hawaii prior to this. You're going to be very much involved in this event. But boy, oh boy, you are just in an idyllic space because the Hawaiian culture is rich with the paranormal and with the understanding of natural laws, the history of the kahunas. All of this is just, it's a part of the culture in the islands that I think is absolutely awesome. Are you going to be bringing any of that back with you?
I will be bringing back that, yes. And I love it here. I'm getting chilled as you describe that. And you're right, the more that there's so much out there to discover, and some of it really is the ancient mystic secrets.
It is. The kahunas of Hawaii had an understanding of natural law that Dr. Brigham, who the Honolulu Museum was named after, and he was a first-class scientist, and he said to one of his protégés, or the protégé, Max Freedom Long, he said, there's natural law working here, and we just don't know what it is. Max, I think, thought he found it, but I don't know that he did, because there were no elders around of the old school when Max came in to the picture, at least not that I'm aware of. But you've got a tremendous cultural environment there. We'll look forward to seeing you on Saturday, June the 29th, and that's at the BEPC Conscious Wellness Expo. Again, that's from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. at the Kent Commons, 525 4th Avenue North, Kent, Washington, 98042. Aloha, and Danny, I envy you.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. And have safe travels and happy travels with your family and coming home as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Donna Sebo here. Ah, yes, the islands are calling, but I'm not going to be able to take a plane. I do. Oh, they're just, it's just wonderful to go to the islands. And, you know, I had an experience there so many years ago when I was doing broadcasting in the islands. And I'll never forget, I was on a bus. I was on a bus, and there was this woman sitting next to me on the bus, and she was very, very conversational, and we were enjoying a chat, and then out of her mouth came something, and we were sitting up in the front seat of the bus, and just adjacent to the driver, and this was in downtown Honolulu, and she started making comments about how utterly lazy the Hawaiian people were. And I could not believe the statements that were coming out of her mouth. And I listened and I looked at her and I said, well, I want you to know something. The Hawaiian people are very industrious people. I said, they are smarter than we are. However, they realize that when the sun comes up and is in a certain position, you're not out there doing work because you're going to get fried during certain times of the year. I said, you just don't do things. And I said, they're far from being a lazy people. And this woman just looked at me. And you know what? The driver of the bus turned around at me, who was Hawaiian, and he just nodded. And it's interesting to me how people, and even then, that was such a lesson, people make, and we're all guilty of this, make assumptions about a culture, about a people, without taking time to know them. Now, this woman was just totally surprised at my response to her. But I couldn't let her make such inappropriate comments in the environment we were in. It was just not the right thing for her to do. But she was coming from a point of ignorance. And all of us, at one time or another, have done the very same thing. When I go through so much material, I review 400 to 600 publications a year before I will have people on as a guest on my show. And I have different points of information coming from different cultures. It makes you aware you have to take the time to get to know people and not assume that the environment you come from has it all, because it doesn't. Look at how many wars have been started and upheavals have evolved. Because people had attitudes. It's happened in the United States. It's happened on every continent on this planet. So it's about time we wake up to the reality that even though we have social media and we're able to connect, how many times is wrong information given? What Denny said, I think, is very appropriate. Information is coming out at such a speed. It is doubling every day. Just the thought of everything doubling up is overwhelming to most of us. I mean, really, even to a lot of scientists. I know of medical professionals that say, I just cannot keep up with all the latest innovation. And they get a little bit upset when they have patients or clients that come into them and say, hey, I found out about this on the internet, or so-and-so emailed me this or texted me about this. What do you know about it? And they have to say, I don't know anything about it. That takes courage to say it. But we must be willing to learn. And something else that we need to be aware of is that history is being changed every single day. A lot of aspects of history that we thought were etched in the concrete of the universe, somebody's getting out a jackhammer and just cracking it up into dust. Why? Because through technology, we are becoming aware that we really don't know as much as we like to think we do. Fascinating stuff. By the way, the phone line is now open if you wanted to give me a buzz. 253-582-5597 is the studio number to call into. And, oh, I almost forgot. Let me share with you the guest that we are going to be talking with tomorrow is Monty Reed. It's Get Started, Don't Quit, Walk. That's right. There is so much. They shall walk. There is so much that we are going to be talking about. And then also Kay Kendall, After You're Gone, You're More Powerful Than You Think, The Art of Preventing Stupid. Let's see what that comes up with and so much more. My goodness, we have so many wonderful people on this program. And also, who's coming up on Warriors for Peace? It's the Green Berets in the Land of Elephants. Joseph Selesky is going to be my guest on Wednesdays, and you know that's always a double header. For those of you that are regular listeners, you know that every Wednesday we have Warriors for Peace from 7 until 8, and then the Donna Sebo Show from 8 until 9, and this is Pacific Time. If you miss a program, all you have to do is go into my website, DelphiInternational.com, click on the Donna Sebo Show link, and you've got access to the archives, and the player is repeating the latest 13 to 15 hours of recent programming, and you have literally thousands of shows that you can go in and listen to in the archives of the Donna Sebo Show. All of that is made available to you for free, so share it with your friends and your family. Let them know that all of this wonderful programming, positive programming, is available to you, and I just absolutely am so grateful that you take the time to listen to the programming, because I like to think that maybe there is something you're going to become aware of that you otherwise would never have known about. And again, we have guests from around the world. How would you like to pick up a mood if you're feeling sort of blah, down in the dumps? You go, oh, I don't know what's wrong with me. I've got peanut butter in my brain, and it's just ooey gooey. I can't think. It's just not working for me. Well, I'll tell you what. Music is one of the best tools you can ever use. Why? Because they've learned with aerobics, when it's done to music, people get better results physically. Why? Because it just... typically, the music that's done in aerobic classes has a wonderful beat, and you just keep moving. That's what you keep doing. Also, they have found that jazz actually improves brain functioning. Who knew that? I didn't. Why? Because there's so many different rhythms and tempos. You also find that you can hear the subtleties in the music more accurately. Just absolutely amazing. Stress. That helps you with stress. If you have some songs that, you know, just a Mary Poppins type of song, or, you know, it's the Sound of Music. It just, I don't know, it just touches your heart, your being, whatever moves you. And creativity? My goodness, classical music has been known to really make that work. And if you have trouble going to sleep, if you have something that's got sort of a slow, I don't want to say monotonous, but slow kind of a beat to it, just relaxation, it works. But music also helps your immune system, not just keep you physically fit, but helps that immune system to work more efficiently. And I'll tell you something else that they learned in Bellevue, Washington, at the Bellevue Mall. And this was a number of years ago. They were having major problems with teenagers that would come in and were raucous and were just creating havoc. It was a mess. And so they thought, gee, do we need more security guards? What are we going to do? We don't have the budget to do that. So what else can we do? Someone who knew about the value of music said, let's play classical music. That went over really big with all of the customers, but that did not go over big with the teenagers. They stopped coming into the mall because it wasn't their kind of music. Problem solved. Amazing. They also have found that with classical music, that actually students are study better. Also, many different aspects of classical music have been utilized. I know, because I've talked with some people who worked scientifically on this that actually promoted healing. Why is that the case? It is the case because it is all vibrational. Everything in life has a vibratory frequency to it, even disease. But disease doesn't want to have certain frequencies because it will die from those frequencies. Sound and light is something that was proven to be very, very effective, and this was done centuries ago. We've sort of gotten away from that, but more and more information is coming out about that very, very factor that is being implemented in treatments today. And I can tell you for a fact, color has an immense impact on the wellness of people. It really, really does. There was a wonderful photographic artist. His name was Joey Fisher. And Joey was this little bitty guy that had so much energy, he wondered how he was able to even make it through life. He was just going a mile a minute. And Joey was commissioned to put in a wall that got a lot of sun this mosaic of photographs, and it absolutely was amazing when it was unveiled. Patients came out of the hospital rooms. It went up like 3 or 4 floors. When the sun came through that and illuminated all of the colors, patients came out of their rooms and just the looks on their faces were just phenomenal. They loved it. The hospital staff had a better disposition. It was a huge improvement in that hospital environment. Color makes a difference. If you have an environment that you're in where you sort of feel sort of blah, if it's dark, you have too much brown, you don't have any lively colors, it's dark and oppressive, it's very depressing. Look at nature. Nature is not that way. Even during winter, there's splashes of color. Nature is not without a vibratory frequency that is letting us know that it's very much alive and constantly changing. So watch nature. I know we're just about out of time. And before I do that, well, I know I've only got a minute here. I wanted to talk about the Nazca line. Somewhere between 300 BC and AD 450, there were literally hundreds of pictures, over 100 pictures of animals, plants, bipeds, patterns, all designed in the northern Peru plateau, and many of you already know this. They were first spotted in the 1920s because we were beginning to fly over the area. 1942, there was more of a curiosity. And Maria Reich, who's a trained mathematician, she began to investigate the lines. I believe she's still investigating them today. And they had been created by removing the topsoil, which was very, very dark, to reveal what is underneath the topsoil, and it's a white, yellowish type of a substance. And she has done the documentation on this. They're still researching it. All of these were put into an area of about 200 square miles. And, you know, the accuracy of it is just amazingly precise. And they are up to 5 miles long. They deviate no more than 10 feet per mile. They have defined entrances and were drawn in one continuous line. Amazing. And there's so much information about this. And she has just done so much studying. She said they had to have been able to fly. They had to have been able to do something. There's a legend, an Inca legend, of Ataki, the boy who could fly. Fascinating stuff. Every culture has its mysteries. Donna Sebo here. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless, be well, and don't forget, there's many mysteries to seek out, to explore. Who knows? You may find the answer to some of them. Life is an adventure. Enjoy the journey. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now. We'll be right back.
been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.